The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alex Kratosky. And on this week's program, we're speaking with the new deputy CEO of the Tech City Investment Organization. And we pick apart the high-profile and, frankly, utterly astonishing appointment of Marissa Mayer, employee number 20 at Google, who's now the CEO of Yahoo. Whoa. Join Charles Arthur and I for the next 30 minutes for these stories and more news from Tech Weekly from The Guardian. By far the biggest tech news item of 2012, as far as I'm concerned, is the announcement that Marissa Mayer, Google's 20th employee and number 5 in that pecking order, has left the search engine for the rival Yahoo. Charles, my jaw hit the floor when I saw that. What? Huh?
It's a really clever appointment. I think it's, you know, it's utterly brilliant. And Marissa Mayer is one of the smartest people who wasn't already a chief executive around. She's got extensive management experience because she was with Google from when it was a tiny startup, like you say, employee number 20. She was in charge of how the search engine results looked right up until 2010, when she was shifted sort of sideways-ish to be in charge of local and places. And then someone was put in over the top of her, which meant that not only was the glass ceiling there, but they were also painting it over.
They certainly were. And I have to say, it was interesting to see how the CEO role, how the top brass at Google was shifting, because she was never really considered. It didn't look like it was a permeable ceiling at all for her.
No, absolutely. And I suspect that for someone who has ambitions, like, you know, she clearly would have, you might start looking around. But I think all kudos to the headhunters and the Yahoo board, who had secret meetings with her. They held it very much off campus. There were all sorts of interesting things. You know, the details are lovely. Like, you know, they drove the cars for miles and miles and circled back and turned around to make sure no one was tailing them. You know, they met in
Google knows all.
Lawyers. Yeah, that's right. But as much as anything, they didn't want the press knowing about it because, you know, Yahoo's board has been a leaky ship previously. The suggestion is that they found a mole in senior management who was providing news and leaks to various news sites. And that's part of why none of this leaked out. And it just exploded over the internet like a bomb.
It certainly did. And so clearly, you know, this had been going on for some time, the poaching of Marissa. But how on earth, like, does she have time that she has to work out? No, because she's already started it. Yeah.
No, the way that California works is you can't have no compete laws. Those have been struck down by the California
courts. That must have been it. So there, and this was my next question, is this is clearly, you know, there are conflicts that are going on here. She's got a lot of insider information on Google, which is one of the primary Yahoo rivals. So how is this all going to fall out? What's going to happen?
Well, Yahoo's problems are bigger than just knowing a bit about what Google's long-term plan is. I mean, actually, to some extent, Google's long-term plan is pretty clear. It wants to mold all of its social stuff that it's doing at Google Plus into search and to roll that into mobile as well, because, you know, it can see the mobile as the future. Yahoo's challenge is that no one still quite knows what it's for. And, you know, a lot of people have said, okay, Marissa, tell us what is Google for? And that's not easily answered. But equally, if there's someone who can turn it into a great internet resource, then I think that she's probably the person. Yeah. To some extent, she's being looked down as the last throw of the dice. But actually, as dice go, you'd quite like to have the Yahoo ones to roll, because you have Flickr, which is a tremendous photography resource, which was one of the first social sites, really, got things going in the sort of 2003 to 2005 space, just didn't make the transition to mobile yet. But of course, mobile is a big space where there's lots of potential. Google's not making much money out of mobile. Facebook isn't really making any money out of mobile. Yahoo has huge potential to move into there and to become, you know, a primary place for people to go. there's lots of things to be fixed. Yahoo Mail, for example, still needs better security. It still needs to be a much more useful resource. Yeah, but given that she oversaw what happened with Gmail, can be done.
So what has been the response? I mean, people were initially stunned. And how have people online and how have people in the top brass of other companies responded?
Google sort of said, we're going to be sorry to see her go.
And one sort of felt that they thought,
damn, missed it there. But you know, everyone else has been very supportive, and it's really been very interesting how ex-Yahoo employees have been saying this is great, and you know, the messages that one hears about having come from people inside Yahoo are similar. Even so, people reckon that there's still fat to pick up. That actually, what Yahoo needs is to be taken by the scruff of the neck, shaken very, very thoroughly. That actually what she needs to do is to replace a lot of the people who've just been clinging onto the wreckage with sort of tiger teams of developers who are going to produce really amazing, spiffy new products which people will want to use, rather than things that people sort of use because that's what they've been using since forever.
So she has, she's got a 2-week holiday coming up, I believe, yes, because she's giving birth in 2 months' time. She's taking two weeks as well.
I wouldn't be so sure she's going to take 2 weeks
off.
That's
apparently the reported thing, is that she's taking 2 weeks. But that in and of itself is a really interesting development. It came out that afternoon
she was
pregnant. Yeah. So she's clearly taking the bull by the horns, Yes, indeed. So that's going to be quite a complicated adaptation for Yahoo when their CEO has her 2 weeks off, and literally that has been what's been reported.
I think it's going to be a slight distraction. You know, I've seen through 3 pregnancies. You know, I've sort of been a pretty close observer there, and it can be pretty hectic. I mean, there's no indication yet of what it's been like for her, but you know, as I understand it, when the baby's sort of using your bladder as a trampoline, things can get distracting. So it'll be interesting to see how good she is. But hey, you know, she's a pretty effective executive when she's not distracted. And I'd imagine that even when she's, you know, eight and a half months pregnant, she's probably going to be the equal of pretty much anyone out there.
Absolutely.
And actually, one of the fascinating things that's come out is how Ross Levinson, who had been on, you know, is a Yahoo board member who had been expecting to get the CEO job. He'd been over in the UK and he'd sent a sort of an email around going, ahead of this announcement, where it was sort of, you know, just measuring himself up for the job, just sort of trying on the jacket, basically. Yeah, it's a bit like someone in a golf tournament like the Masters when they're sort of, you know, they're in the back nine and they think they've got a nice solid lead and they're sort of already mentally putting on the green jacket going, hey, you know, here I am. And then suddenly someone charges past them. And the Levinson email is actually unintentionally hilarious because it shows just how he had really no idea about what to do. Yeah, and it was going to be just the same old Yahoo sort of sinking slowly in, you know, beneath the waves. And the expectation is that Mayer is going to be able to attract great talent and, you know, do great things.
Well, we shall follow this extensively at guardian.co.uk/technology. And in more Google news, Google continues to consume new and useful products and services. The latest is Sparrow, an email application that's received a dedicated following from Mac users. So what's going to happen now that Google have put the bird in its cage, Charles? What has happened? Tell me about Sparrow.
Well, the thing about Sparrow is that it was a paid-for app for the Mac desktop platform and also for the iOS, you know, iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad platform. And a lot of people really liked it. I got to say, I didn't try it myself. But, you know, it had a dedicated following. There were people who were very eager to hand over their money for it. Google swooped in at the end of last week and bought it for a sum slightly south of $25 million, we hear. Which means that there's going to be no further development on it. So what you have is what you get. They were working on a version for Windows. Obviously, that's not going to come out now. It's not clear whether Google is going to start pushing Sparrow along or whether actually what they're doing is taking the development team and the skills there, rolling them into, you know, whatever they're doing with their products.
How long before we know?
I would give it a few months. be honest, because they have to sort of go through the Google inculcation. They have to figure out what actually, you know, what does Google want to do with them? And even if Google has a really razor-sharp idea of and plan for what they want to do, it still has to work through all the processes. It still has to come out the other end.
And the thing about Sparrow is that it was a very clean, uncluttered mail client. And you know, is that an adaptation that Google is seeking? Would this be something for their Android platform? It just seems that, as you said in one of your comments on the tech blog, does the world really need another email client? You know, how many does the world actually need? So is your sort of internal sense that this lovely clean thing is just going to be put on the shelf and Google's going to say, thank you very much, we just want your talent?
I'd say that the Android mail client could do with work. And I think that actually might be a space where they could, you know, really find something useful to do. As to whether they'll produce then a version of Gmail for iOS, that could happen as well. That would make sense because Google did produce a Gmail client for the iOS platform, and it was horrendous. It was an HTML5 sort of klutz. Sort of, you know, it's just stuck together almost, and it was a terrible experience. Really, what you need to do with those sorts of things is build native apps. So it would be interesting to see if Google is trying to, in effect, partition what happens on iOS. The expectation is that when iOS 6 comes out and doesn't have Google Maps on it, because it'll use different maps for inbuilt, that Google will offer Google Maps, which it already does for the iPad. So then you'll start to have Google Maps, Google Search, which exists already, and you could have Google Mail. So in effect, you know, Apple users would be able to get all these, you know, good Google services in Google-designed aesthetics, and you know, Google could define the experience. But I have got to say that I think if I was setting a priority, I'd say the Android one first.
Yeah, that seems to be, you know, that kind of package system just seems to be a little bit of a distraction. But then again, I don't really know much, do I? You can follow that, of course, at guardian.co.uk/technology. The patent battle between Apple and Samsung continues. Charles, what's the latest on this?
The latest is that Tim Cook, who's the chief executive of Apple, and some senior Samsung electronics executives had a meeting on Monday of last week. So that takes us back to the sort of teens of July, and tried to sort out their differences before they go to court in San Jose, California. Couldn't. They disagree basically on the value of patents, on how much each should pay the other for the use of patents, whether Samsung is infringing Apple patents, whether Apple is infringing Samsung patents. Basically, they can't come to any agreement, and it's a pattern that we're just seeing repeated around the world. They're suing each other again and again in countries all over the world, and to some extent, they've got into John Pakoski on the All Things Digital website calls it the 100-year patent war. And they sort of are in that situation where neither can quite let go of the other. You know, they're like two people who are fighting each other, and neither wants to let go because they're worried about what the other will do.
If one territory falls, say Australia or somewhere else, would that then have implications for this patent war as it spreads around, as it goes in its big merry-go-round?
But they do keep on falling. You know, so for a while the Galaxy Tab was banned in Australia, then it was unbanned, and the Galaxy Nexus was banned in the US, and then it was unbanned, and you know, Samsung has tried to ban the iPhone 4S in France, and you know, things happen and then they unhappen, and it's just a sort of an endless series where it's I mean, to some extent, it's like World War One. You know, these guys sort of jump out of the trenches, they run a bit, you know, some people fall down, then the judge says, oh no, actually, let's go back to the start. And so they go back in the trenches, redig, regroup, and nothing actually gets solved.
And when is this next trial happening?
The next trial begins on July the 30th in San Jose. Get your popcorn now.
Follow these news stories and more at guardian.co.uk/technology. Two years ago, David Cameron announced the Tech City Initiative, a London-based policy strategy aimed at increasing investment in the emerging localized startup hub near Old Street Roundabout in Shoreditch in East London. Curious if there were any chops behind this idea, and to test the actual investment of time, not cash, that is, by number 10, Tech Weekly ran a series of special events with ministers late last year trying to tackle the key themes. So these are things like copyright and piracy and education. You can listen to those at guardian.co.uk/techweekly. Plug over. Almost 1 year on, and the government is ramping up its tech city attentions as we meander towards the second anniversary and also towards the Olympics. Today, we're joined by Ben Southworth, the new deputy CEO of the Tech City Investment Organization, and Eileen Burbage from White Bear Yard, one of the advisory board members on the phone. Welcome to you both.
Hi.
Hi, Alex.
Thank you very much for joining us. Ben, I have a question for you. The Tech City Investment Organization, can you give me a lowdown on what it is?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably quite a kind of grand name for quite a simple idea. It's really just about finding a way to encourage what's pre-existing and finding listening channels from what's going on and pushing that back up to those who can really make decisions. So what we're trying to do as much as possible is just kind of help curate, sort of stimulate and just make sure everything that's going on right now in that kind of exciting little corridor is getting fed back to the government so they can make the right decisions and really help support it.
But the key word there is investment. So this is different from just sort of, you know, building up a buzz, which is, to be fair, what it seems has been happening with the Tech City initiative anyway. So can you tell me a little bit more about the investment aspect and what role you're going to play in it?
So what we're trying to do is bring outside investment in. There's always been a huge problem within the UK scene, or perceived scene anyway, that outside VC isn't at the levels of the Silicon Valley, et cetera, et cetera. And we're constantly feeling like we're in the shadow of the great American might of VCs. Now, firstly, VC investment is pretty much standard. You know, we're not at 2000 levels by a long way. And we are Europeans, so we're slightly less for sort of risk-friendly, I suppose. So the investment is we're trying to work with other VCs, bring them in, show them what's going on in London, show them the talent that's coming out of Google Campus, for example, Mozilla Spaces, and really showing them what's going on, just trying to connect all those dots together. So the investment organisation is about trying to pull in more external money so that everyone can spend it and create, you know, hopefully the next Google, the next Facebook, the next Songkick, the next Moo, and really create something that's valuable.
Why not create something that's totally different from those things?
I've used product startups there just because they're easier to mention. But, I mean, of course, you know, why not create the next autonomy? Why not create the next CSR? You know, and obviously biotech's going to be the next big thing. So, you know, it's all about trying to stimulate all of this and trying to create, you know, there's no focus by TCIO about what we're trying to do or how we're trying to do it. All we're trying to do is see what we can do and make introductions, pull in investment from external places, and to try and make sure that everyone can be supported in what they're trying to do.
Now, Benjamin, you're coming in just as Eric van der Klee, who is the CEO, current CEO of TCIO. So many C's and T's and lovely sounding words. But Eric is on the way out. I understand he's not going to be renewing his contract. So you're going to be, what, the captain of the ship pretty quickly?
No, I will have to take a little bit of time just to be the deputy CEO and carry on. We are recruiting for a new CEO, and we're looking to find someone with the same qualities as Eric. We need someone with really strong leadership. We need someone who's experienced, who's done all this before, who's got a nice bit of verve, a bit of passion, and ideally someone who's kind of, I don't want to say been around the block, but I mean that in a sort of a business way, who really believes in what we're trying to do and trying to create a really exciting part of London.
And what are your qualifications? Like, why wouldn't you go for that job?
I don't want to be captain of this ship. I like doing the community stuff. My job is very, very focused in London. I love London. I've spent the last 12 months creating events that focus on startups in London, be that Digital Sizzle, where we've worked with TCIO before, which is actually how I got to start this conversation, and really looking at how we can encourage the government to do the right thing. So I've already been banging on the door of the government saying, this is what you need to be doing. So when this job came up, it seemed like an ideal situation. So things like Silicon Drink About every Friday is a great place to go and meet people, a great way to hear feedback, try and work out where we're going next, what's more needed, are more desks needed, is it broadband an issue? Start to listen to that and then feed it back.
So what are your specific deliverables on this? What are you, because otherwise it is just a talking shop. And that is one of the criticisms of Tech City, and has been a pretty vocal criticism of Tech City, that that there's a lot of talk, that there's a lot of attention, particularly around the anniversaries. But in between, there's, you know, what is actually being done and what are you going to be doing?
So my job really is predominantly just to listen and feedback. But that doesn't mean it's a talking shop. It's about trying to work out what can we do in Britain to make sure we're supporting the only growth sector in the entire economy. Now, it would be foolish of anyone to say we know exactly how to do that. You know, there isn't a person in the world who knows quite how to encourage a startup community effectively. because it's just completely organic and it just moves and it does its own thing. So my key deliverables really are just making sure that we carry on this path and no one gets left behind and no one can't do what it is they want to do, which is start a business. Right now, it's really, really important that we're encouraging the young coming straight out of university with great skills to build businesses that matter, that make an impact, you know, and to encourage those people to employ more people.
Eileen, I'd like to turn to you now and talk a bit about some of the practicalities. Ben mentioned there that Europe is risk averse when it comes to investment. Now, you are an investor in the UK. You're based in the UK. Can you tell me a little bit about what the scene is like? You have an American accent or a North American accent. Apologies if you are Canadian.
All right.
Listen, I get it all the time. So, you know, can you tell me a little bit about the UK investment scene?
Sure. I mean, first of all, congratulations to Ben on his appointment. And then I think, you know, as he was saying, there's a perceived risk aversion. And I just wanted to emphasize that point because I think, of course, it's all very relative. And one thing that's been great to see over the last maybe 2 to 5 years is how drastically the landscape in the UK and in Europe has changed for at least tech investing. I mean, I think there's probably different mechanics and dynamics behind what's happening maybe with life sciences, with semiconductors, with, you know, clean energy and those kinds of things. But, you know, certainly what we're talking about with TCIO and also with this Tech City Advisory Group is related to internet technologies and online tech. And really what's happening in the digital space is that there's a lot more investment going in there from business angels, from venture capital firms, from corporate venture arms, and a lot more that's being developed by startups and entrepreneurs.
So why is that? What's the zeitgeist? How has this happened? Is it simply that people are saying, "Oh, look, this is the only sector that's growing," or is it have things changed in terms of legalities, in terms of policy, in terms of tax breaks?
It's a little bit of both, but I would say the most change has probably just come culturally. In that, you know, there's a term that some people use, which is, you know, digital natives. I think you've used it a couple of times as well. And I think the entrepreneurs of today, especially in the digital space, are digital natives. They grew up online. They grew up, you know, gaming. They grew up using technology in a way that was completely innate to everything that they did. So that when they come up with business ideas or ideas of what to develop and produce as services online, it's just obvious to them about something that can be of value. So I think that that's very natural to the entrepreneurs of today. Along with the fact that there have been more success stories for people to sort of use as case studies or as examples and things for them to aspire and emulate to. You know, so seeing the success of Skype here in Europe, or seeing the success of e-commerce businesses like QXL or the traditional sort of the first generation eBays and Gumtrees or even Yell and those kinds of things, people are recognizing that they can try and do the same thing and be kind of the next generation of the new web.
Now, Eileen, you sit on the Tech City Advisory Group. Can you tell me a little bit about what that group will do?
Sure. So the group is really, I think, an adjunct to what Ben and TCIO is going to be doing, but also serving as a bridge between TCIO and Number 10.
Yes. So it's a group that's convened. This is the chaos of working within the civil service, isn't it?
A little bit, but it's also meant to sort of get a bit more amplification to what Ben and his team will be doing at TCIO. Because it's actually, the advisory group is convened by Number 10. It's chaired by Rohan Silva, who's a special advisor to the Prime Minister. And so, in a way, it's kind of to take what TCIO is doing to make sure that the Prime Minister and Number 10 is paying attention to what TCIO needs, is prioritizing what TCIO needs or actually wants to deliver, and then is able to do that as a complement to the TCIO group.
Well, speaking of deliver, you mentioned the D word, and I asked Ben before what his deliverables were. What are the deliverables of the advisory group?
So to be honest, the advisory group itself will only meet twice a year. It's just going to meet two times. It's got about 20 individuals involved, and I think what we'll be doing is probably just, again, looking to make sure that the policies that the Prime Minister is looking to fulfill through his vision of making the UK sort of the best place to start a business are actually being prioritized and executed and actually being sort of bounced through the community in that, you know, there's feedback. It's not just being done in a vacuum. It's not just being done by civil servants, that it's actually bounced off of entrepreneurs, investors, you know, co-working space, you know, participants and managers and things like that. And also that we're attracting the best people to the initiatives of TCIO.
What I noticed actually is that it is, by looking at, you know, it's a respectable group of people. You've got representatives from Facebook, you've got representatives from UK startups, you've got representatives from different communities, but it is very much an entrepreneur centralized advisory group. I haven't noticed if there are other people, other business types who would be able to offer an external perspective, or if there are other economic, you know, economists mm-hmm. or people mm-hmm. with particular skills in other areas. It's almost exclusively focused on startup people.
I would say that it is heavily weighted towards startups, but actually no, it's got a good mix and balance. So to your point, you know, Stephen Caddick from UCL is a member, Mike Lynch, founder of Autonomy, is on there. Nicholas Zennstrom, who had founded Skype and is now, you know, head of Atomico. So it does have, you know, what I would regard as certainly heavyweight business experience and credentials. And it also has, even from the academic side, UCL representation. So I do think it's a good balance. It's a good mix. But it does have more entrepreneurial representation. And I think that's because that's where, you know, it's recognized that's where the investment needs to be, to support that entrepreneurial community. And it's a sort of a new era of business and a new way of doing things that the government wants to be able to support and, you know, back, in addition to what it's done historically and traditionally for businesses anyway.
Ben, I want to come back to you for the last question. One of the initial promises, or certainly one of the initial intentions of the Tech City Group, was to have a relationship, if not specifically with LOCOG, the Olympic group, but certainly the legacy that comes out of the Olympics. So things like the Media Center for a long time was talked about, you know, potentially being a hub for startups. Can you tell me what's going on with that? What is the relationship between TCIO, Tech City, and what's happening out in the Olympic Village?
The honest answer is not really, because it's just two organizations who work together. That's it. You know, we're kind of doing similar things in the similar sort of space. There is no Tech City objective about forcing startups out towards Stratford, which is this kind of big sort of hoo-ha and brouhaha and concern. There obviously does make potentially some sense, and this is me talking personally, of moving somewhere where there is great fibre. But it's entirely up for each startup to decide, and there's certainly, I'm never ever going to encourage anyone to go somewhere they shouldn't go. For me, Tech City is not even just about East London, it's about London as a whole. Wherever anyone wants to be, that's where their business should be. And if it makes sense for them to be west, then let's go west. If it's east, if they're, I don't know, if they're an online sports physiotherapy site, then maybe it makes sense to be out in Stratford near those facilities. But other than that, we have no issue about trying to put anyone anywhere. All we want to do is see businesses grow, people create jobs, and people be happy. That's it.
Well, thank you very much, Ben Southworth and Eileen Burbage. That's it from us for this week. Many thanks to Charles and to Ben. You can read more on all these stories at guardian.co.uk/technology and keep up with the latest headlines throughout the week. I'm Alex Kratosky. The producer this week was Jason Phipps. We're back next Tuesday. See you then.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.